this is Sheila Bender, and you are listening to In Conversation, Discussions on Writing and the Writing Life. Today we have with us playwright Jenny Mahoney, who lives in Massachusetts. She has been here in Port Townsend many times as a playwright and master teacher for our Port Townsend Playwrights Festival, and this year she came as a director. She teaches, is an artistic director, and does play development, which she calls herself, because of that, a play development geek. Her plays include Fata Morgana, Kandahar, The Feast of the Flying Cow, and other stories of war, Come Rain or Come Shine, Running in Circles Screaming, The Martyrdom of Washington Booth, Mercy Falls, American Eyes, Scatter, and Light have been presented at the National Playwrights Conference at the O'Neill Center, Interact Theater, Philadelphia, Greenwich Playhouse, London, Denver's Old Vic, and Toto Toto Theater Company, LA Theater Center, Midwest New Play Festival in Chicago, Lark Theater's Playwrights Week, Rattlestick Playwrights Theater, NYU's Hot Ink Festival, Circus Theatricals, Fresh Ground Pepper, Key City Public Theater here in Port Townsend, Boston Theater Marathon, and Boise Contemporary Theater, among others. Jenny, welcome to the show.
Hi, thank you. That makes me sound so busy.
You are busy and geographically spread out, which is something I'm going to get to later in our questions. It's amazing how much ground your plays have covered. And I guess I might begin by saying, have you been to all the places that your plays have been put on?
Pretty much, but not entirely.
So
I try to.
You try to, because it must be exhilarating to see actors and directors working with your work.
It is. It's great. And sometimes, you know, you don't get enough notice to be able to go, and sometimes you can't really afford to go, or a theater can't afford to bring you. So,
yeah. Do you ever get videotapes?
No, but I'm not a big fan of the videotapes. It always somehow is painful on video.
Yeah. It's not like seeing the whole stage. Well, I know that you got to Port Townsend, so how was your stay here?
Fantastic. This year was my fourth time in Port Townsend, and I continue to love it. Basically, I tell Denise Winters all the time, like, it almost doesn't matter what you ask me to do. I'll show up.
And that is because of Key City Theater and our community of writers and actors?
There are very few opportunities to do development work the way that they do at Key City, and there's just a handful of places where it really is about the writer and where the artists and the audiences have really bought into the idea of supporting playwrights in order to make the play stronger and better. So it's just a really very rare thing to get to do.
Exciting to hear, because I know that the population in Port Townsend is very enthusiastic about the plays that Key City puts on, and I don't know that many of us really think about the development. So can you explain a little bit about how including the playwright helps develop the play for the stage?
Sure. One of the things that happens when you have a play that you're writing sort of in your mind, you don't get to test out the time and space element that really is what makes theater unique and makes it different from any other genre. And so you think you know how things are going to happen in time and space, how they'll feel and how they'll land. But until you actually try them, you really don't know. So the opportunity to try it, realize that you're wrong, and then change it is actually quite unusual. Once a play is sort of scheduled for a production, a lot of times the investment that a theater needs to make in terms of time and money and energy means that they can't all of a sudden say, oh, wait, we don't need that actor, or we need a different actor, or we need a second refrigerator. These are all things that you can't really change very easily once you've already committed to a production. But in development, you can change those things very easily. You're not really doing them.
So when you work with playwrights, as you did here in Port Townsend, what do you notice about the writing of, say, new playwrights? I imagine that a lot of the people who come to the class that you've taught here are new to playwriting.
It's interesting. I think that playwrights who have more experience actually take more risks and are more open to changing things and playing around with them, more playful than young playwrights, which seems sort of the opposite of what one might expect. But I think we tend to have an idea. Our idea of theater, for the most part right now, comes from television and movies. So people, when they're starting out, tend to try and fit into this mold of what they've seen, and they're sort of afraid of what will happen if they move it or if they change something, that they won't know how to fix it. So they can get kind of stuck. So a lot of what I try to do when I'm teaching, especially in the sort of situation that we do there, which is a lot of fun and actually is usually just about risk-taking, is to try and encourage young writers to take a risk and to do something that they don't expect, something that surprises them. I think the more experienced you are, the more you realize that if you change it and you don't like it, that you can change it back.
Right.
For some reason, that seems to be harder when you're younger in your playwriting life, to realize that you really can't hurt it.
Oh, that's a good thing to remember, because it starts as words on a page, and certainly that is easy to change, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. So maybe this is a good time for you to tell us about your career as a playwright. I know in my writing life, I know more poets and nonfiction and fiction writers than I do playwrights. Are there fewer of you around?
I don't know. That's a good question. There probably are somewhat fewer, but I think also that playwrights tend to congregate around other theater people. I think there are two different kinds of playwrights. In my mind, there are writers who write plays, and there are theater people who write plays that sort of come from it from different angles. And most playwrights, I think, are theater people who turn to writing plays rather than writers who turn to the theater.
And which are you?
For whatever reason. I'm a theater person who became a writer. I started out as an actor.
Ah.
I got my MFA in acting. I moved to New York to become an actor. I think, to me, playwriting was always something that people who were much more talented than me did, something that smart people did. My grammar on the page was terrible. I was a terrible speller. So I just really did not think that writing was going to be for me. And, of course, it was before spell check. Now you don't even have to worry about that. Once I got to New York, I realized that I really was not enjoying my life as an actor. I wasn't enjoying auditioning. I wasn't enjoying the material I was auditioning. So I actually got the idea that I was going to become a writer, but not a playwright, just a writer, and go sit under a bridge in Prague and just write my own sort of deep, meaningful stuff. I don't know what I was thinking. And so I started putting together money to do that, and I went to take a class at the New School on writing, thinking that I would do some fiction writing. And that's what I started doing, and there was a person in that class who was trying to write a play, and I kept telling her what was wrong with her play, and finally she got really mad at me, and she said, "You think you know so much about theater, why don't you write a play?" And I thought, oh, maybe I should try to write a play. Like, why am I not writing a play? That's actually something I know about, whereas I really had never tried writing fiction before. So I tried writing a play.
And among the many plays that I gave the titles of in your bio, is that first play in there at all? Has it been performed?
Yeah, Mercy Falls was the first play. And it was a short play, a fun play. I was trying to write a farce, so it was a lot of fun. And I still have a fondness for that.
Yeah. I love your story. Inspiration comes from the oddest places, doesn't it? A classmate who who challenges you out of her own despair over your criticisms. Would this be a good time to hear a piece of one or more of your plays?
Sure. And actually, the earlier piece that I was thinking to read was actually from the next play that I wrote after that, which was The Feast of the Flying Cow and Other Stories of War, which was the first full-length play that I wrote. It's sort of a creative nonfiction piece when I started writing in this class. And so it became the inspiration for my first full-length play, which I think is really the play that made me decide that I wanted to do this as more than just answering the challenge of some girl in a writing class.
Mm-hmm.
So this play that takes place in a war-torn country, there are two couples in the play. One couple lives in this war-torn country, and the other couple is a diplomat and his wife. And they are sitting down preparing to eat stew, which is made primarily from the body of the upstairs neighbor who they accidentally shot.
Oh.
So
I see what you mean by taking risks.
Yeah. And so instead of saying sort of a prayer before dinner, they're going around the table and each person is saying making a wish. And so the character speaking in this monologue is Isaac, who is the man in the couple that lives in this country. He says, "I wish that it was harder to kill a man. I just think it should take more effort, not just this tool, this gun to point and pull. We should have to chase each other down like animals and tear the enemy's flesh with our nails and teeth, hunt for the vein that will empty our combatant's body the fastest, feel their blood in our mouth, their skin and muscle and soul. The price of that life should be one of total exhaustion. The victor should stumble home filthy and wasted, having to sleep for days. He should wake up with sore muscles and scraped joints that send shooting pains through the body for weeks as a reminder, each time taking us back to a moment, a blow, a bite, a physical memory of each life taken, something that rushes like a wave over the body, a shudder so strong that it may hemorrhage us completely. This is where mankind fails. We live with our heads. Think of it. Yes, think. We depend on this to make us the greatest, most powerful animal in the world. We can cover the earth with asphalt 10 times over. What great animals we are. We found a way to kill each other without more than the jump of a synapse. Pull the trigger. There, it's done. Close your eyes. Walk away. Close your eyes. It tastes like chicken."
Whoa.
You are listening to KPTZ 91.9 Port Townsend. In case you've just joined us, you are listening to In Conversation with Sheila Bender, discussions on writing and the writing life. Today, Sheila is talking with playwright Jenny Mahoney about writing for the stage and teaching others to do so.
When did you write that play?
I wrote this in 1997. It's unfortunately a play that continues to be relevant.
That's right.
You know, you think the war ended that made that relevant, and then another one comes.
Yeah. But also just the daily shootings of people. I mean, if everybody who committed that crime had to wake up feeling the way this character describes, they wouldn't want to, hopefully.
Mm-hmm.
Wow. So what is the place of monologues in a play, do you think? That's a very impassioned monologue. And do the other characters have their say at such length around the table?
No, actually, his is definitely the longest. I was thinking about this as I was looking for material to read, because it is true that monologues tend to be very impassioned. Monologues, I always think, are like, they're like the songs in musicals. They're moments when people are so impassioned that they sort of break into song in a way. Because usually in real life, we never let someone talk that long.
That's true.
So it has to be something that is important enough that someone feels like they have to speak about it at such length, and also something that's important enough that nobody's going to interrupt them. That does make monologues a little bit different from a lot of what happens in a play.
So did you have another monologue to read to us from another play or the same play?
Yeah, I have something from a different play. Yeah, and it's funny because I was looking at some of these different plays and they all feel like so impassioned. Here, I'll do one from Fata Morgana, which is a more recent play. The couple who live out in the desert have sort of run to the desert to get away from their families and the pressures of life at home, and mainly to get away from a pregnancy that they lost and they want to not be reminded of. But they are reminded of because pregnant niece, who's like 14, shows up at their door. So in this monologue, Tori, who is the lead character, is talking about her sister, who is the mother of this pregnant girl, Morgan. Does that make sense?
Uh-huh.
So Tori, talking about her sister, says, "There could be a piano falling out of the sky, aimed right at her head, and somehow at the very last minute it would catch on something, take a wild bounce, and land on me. We were pregnant at the same time, her and me, for a few minutes anyway. It's funny, she came to me one day and said, 'It's time for me to get pregnant now.' And me, who had been trying for forever, said, 'Trust me, little sister, it doesn't work that way.' And then it did. And that was Morgan. She was so beautiful, so perfect, and for a while it didn't seem to matter that she wasn't ours, you know? But then it did. Like a knife was gutting us, gutting us just a little more every day until we were more hollowed out, dead than alive. And we tried everything, spent everything. He used to offer to sit for Morgan 5-6 nights a week just to be with her. Other nights when we were left to ourselves, just me and Jack, hop in the Chevy and drive. Just drive. Like somehow we could drive past it or lose it somewhere along the way. And then one night we just kept driving until we found ourselves here. And it was like we'd found the edge of the earth, not a tree, not a road or a fence. And I thought, a person could see forever from here. No more worrying about pianos falling out of the sky. No more wondering why some things seem to come so easy to some folks and so hard to us. And I was sure there was nothing coming after me that I couldn't see. Till now.
Listening to you read makes me think about how much plays demand of an audience to listen. As you said, we don't really let people talk that long usually. We don't listen because we're making up our next question or our next thought or the thing we really want to say. And when a play is before us, if we're engaged in it, it's very demanding emotionally. And I wonder what you think, if you have something to say about that.
Yeah, that's true. I mean, it's also one of the things about writing dialogue, because in order for dialogue to be honest and to sound true, it has to incorporate that sense of people who are actually not even listening to each other. Mm-hmm. So the characters actually are not necessarily listening to each other in the same way the audience is listening to them, because the audience is working harder and listening to everything. The characters, in order for us to recognize them as being like real people, are actually doing exactly what you just said, listening as they're also preparing the next question or looking to hear the thing that they want to talk about.
So that's really interesting. So we're, as audience, a whole different kind of character than the ones on stage.
Yeah, absolutely.
That must be a very hard thing, I would think, to work with as a playwright. What happens in the play after this monologue that you just read?
Oh, it's so awful. I have another monologue that explains it.
Okay, is it a different character or the same person?
It's the same character.
Uh-huh.
It's the same character, Tori, later in the play, telling the story of what happened after Morgan's water broke.
Okay.
Early.
All right.
Before it should have. She says, I begged her to go to the clinic, Shell, but she just kept saying it was too early, that it wasn't time yet. But by the time we were finally on our way, I'm timing the contraction, but they're close. They're too close. So I stop to check, and I can see she's coming, but not her head, not her foot. It's like, I don't know, maybe a shoulder or a knee. And I told her to stop pushing. I begged her, but she wouldn't stop. It was like she was an animal, like she was possessed. And she's pushing, and she's screaming at Michelle, begging me to get it out of her, get it out, get it out, get it out. But I can't, because she's stuck. Turned wrong, maybe sideways, I can't tell, and there's so much, and it's everywhere, and I think she must be drowning in there. She must be suffocating in there. That's when I see it, Shelp. A hand. This precious, tiny hand reaching out for me. For me, Shelp, what could I do? And there's nothing around us, nothing. Just streams of heat rising up off the road and ribbons and me watching, wishing they would magically turn into something, anything, any person who could help. And she's begging Michelle to get it out of her, get it out of her, get it out of her. And she doesn't care how anymore. She just wants it to be over. She wants it to be out. Well, I got her out.
Oh.
And the mother does not survive that. So.
Yeah. Hmm. You have some dark themes going on, don't you?
You know, when I was looking at these monologues, it sort of feels that way. Although, in fact, actually, most of the plays are mostly funny in some ways. But I think that part of what I enjoy doing makes it sound like I'm a cruel person. But I do tend to do a little bit of what I think someone once referred to it as dramaturgical whiplash, which is it's very funny and it makes you fall in love with the people so that it hurts more when a terrible thing happens. It just sounds horrible, but the further a character falls, the greater the tragedy.
Right. But that's really, I think, a lesson in writing fiction as well, is that you have to torque up the conflict for the characters, that we're not reading just about everyday stuff, even if it seems everyday. There's a higher pitch to it all, the drama. And I like that. Dramaturgical whiplash is what you said?
Yeah.
Yeah. Thank you for that phrase.
Sure.
So there are so many questions that I have for you and so little time. But one of my questions is, plays are typically seen by an audience on stage, but what if we want to read them? And I know, having gone to your website, which I want to offer the address of, which is www.jenny, J-E-N-I, Mahoney, Mahoney.com, you do have your plays that are in print listed and available for purchase. And so maybe you could tell us more about, is that normal? Is that how you can find a play usually, eventually, somehow, if you can't get to the stage?
Yeah, and there are a lot more opportunities now because of the internet for playwrights to do sort of a similar version, sort of either working with a small publisher or an e-publisher or even a self-publisher. But a lot of my plays are on a site called IndieTheaterNow.com, which publishes a lot of new playwrights. It makes getting your hands on plays a lot easier.
That sounds great. So Indie, I-N-D-I-E?
Yeah.
What'd you say, IndiePlays.com?
IndieTheaterNow.com.
Oh, IndieTheaterNow.com. Thank you. What do you think, though? Do you think it's a different experience reading the play, isn't it, than seeing it performed?
Yeah, absolutely. And reading plays, I think, can be challenging because a lot of people have trouble trying to keep track of characters. Just the formatting of it can make it challenging when there's a lot of characters. But if you start reading plays with a limited number of characters and just get used to it, then it's easier to read some of the bigger plays. But the other thing I think is it can be really useful, even if you can't gather together another person to read a play with, which I highly recommend because it's just fun and you get a better sense of the play, is to read it out loud, even if you're just by yourself.
I think that's a good way of hearing the passion in the words. Listening to you read confirms that for me. So what would you tell a theater-going audience or a potential theater-going audience about the value of live theater in today's digital world?
I think what makes theater really unusual relative to television or film or things that you see on the internet, it is the audience. It is, if you're in the audience, it's you, because it is about a live conversation that's happening between the people in the audience and the people on stage. And then the people who are all in the audience all together, the liveness of it, the fact that everybody in that room experiences it together, probably the most valuable thing about it.
I know that when I come,
regardless of what you're seeing,
when I come out of a live performance, the word I would use for how I feel is nurtured. I enjoy television. I enjoy movies a lot, but I don't get that feeling when I walk out of a theater, whether it's been a comedy or a tragedy, a musical, or just straight drama. I feel so nurtured by the performances, and I didn't actually connect that maybe I feel partly nurtured by the audience as well, that I'm sharing it. So that is something we're losing, isn't it, in our digital iPad, tablet way.
Yeah. It is, and it's interesting. I think sometimes audiences don't necessarily realize how much they are bringing to the experience. That you can, when you're on stage with a play, when a play is actually happening, or even if I'm sitting in the audience and listening to a play of mine, there is an awareness that the people who are performing the play have of the audience's presence. There are moments when you can hear an audience breathing together, mm-hmm. and when you know that an audience is that with you as an actor, that fuels you. So it is not just a one-way experience. They're not just doing something and we're watching it.
Right.
We're all sort of fueling it.
Yeah. So that's a fabulous thing to remember, that the actors can actually hear sometimes the audience breathe, that it's an interchange. That's very valuable. So I want to thank you so much, Jenny, for your time and for telling us about the world of playwriting and your world and reading from your work. And I hope that people will visit your website, www.jennymahoney.com. theatreofthewriter.com and think about reading plays, but more than that, think about attending them. Thanks again so much.
Thank you so much. It's been a pleasure.
You have been listening to In Conversation, Discussions on Writing and the Writing Life with Sheila Bender. For more of Sheila's interviews, please go to Sheila's website, www.writingitreal.com/audio.
In Conversation is produced by Sheila Bender and edited by Charlie Fleischman. Announcer is Kurt Vanderslice.